WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As rock music has gotten more technically and electronically advanced, and in some cases more pretentious as well, there's been a wave of bands going back to the roots of the music, back to blues, R&B, and rockabilly. One of the American bands at the forefront of that movement in the early 80s was the Blasters. The group was led by Phil and Dave Alvin, two brothers from a working-class neighborhood in L.A. Phil was the lead singer. Younger brother Dave wrote the songs and played lead guitar. After several albums, Dave left the band in 86. He played guitar with X for a while, then went solo. He's just released his second solo album called Blue Boulevard. Before we meet him, let's hear the title track.
Empty road in this lonely town. No one's up when the sun goes down. And I turn around and cruise once more by the old parking pass abandoned stores. Oh, baby, it drives me crazy. 'Cause every day
Album. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You, for years, wrote songs for other people. In the Blasters, you wrote songs that your brother Phil would sing.
Yeah.
How is it different writing for you?
With my brother, for example, he was probably the pickiest person as far as what words. He would sit down with me and we'd go word by word through a song and he'd go, no, I don't like that. Get that out of there. Use was, or, you know. And I'd have to write things that he and I had shared, you know, experiences or environmental things. Like, I had one song that I wrote called The Border Radio, and he and I grew up listening to border radio stations, so it's like, okay, he can relate to this, I can relate to this. And then towards the end of the Blasters, I just kind of ran out of things that we had shared, you know. I couldn't write real personal songs because I'd gone through things that he hadn't gone through and vice versa. And so I think probably the major difference is I don't have a censor. You know, I think every writer, you know, has a censor inside of them saying, this stinks, you know. And by not having to worry about what someone else would sing, got rid of a sort of a needless censor and just left me with my own personal censor, which also says this stinks, you know.
You know, this will sound like a B movie or something. But did you ever feel
that's my life?
But did you ever feel when you did write something that was reasonably personal, and your brother or somebody else sang it, like, well, everybody thinks that this is about them, that this is from their gut, that this is what they're feeling, but it's really about me?
Yeah. Well, I'd get upset sometimes when a lot of people, when they see someone singing a song, especially in the post-Dylan era, they think the person singing it is the person who wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember in the early days of Blasters, before, like, people knew who wrote the songs and who, you know, whatever, sang them, I'd always get a little, like, people would come backstage and say to my brother, boy, that's a great song you got there. You wrote a great song there, you know. And he's always been real, well, no, my brother David wrote that. But it still got frustrating because, you know, it just got frustrating, let's put it that way.
Okay, and in talking about writing personal songs that you couldn't write for somebody else, I want to play a song called Andersonville. I don't know if this comes under that category or not. It's really not about you. It's about a soldier during the Civil War who fights on the Union side and ends up in a Confederate prison.
Yeah, but it's about my great uncle or great great granduncle, a guy named Asa Powell, who died in Andersonville, and we were, I guess I was about 8 years old, 7 years old, and I got this box, a little tiny box, from my Aunt Margaret, who's sort of the historian of the family. And inside the box were two photographs of him, one on tin, which was a photograph of him when he enlisted, and he was, you know, like 17, 18 years old, and had this big bright face, and he's in his uniform, and he's all happy. And then there's a photograph from about 3 or 4 years later from Andersonville on glass, just this very, very cheap, very, you know, almost, you can barely see it now. It was so, you know, sort of cheaply done. And he is, you know, like I said, 3 years older, and he looks 70. So that's always been like, you know, I guess, my connection with some kind of past. We were not a real, you know, family that went in for the genealogy stuff, but that was like this living thing. And anyway, when I decided to start writing songs again and make a record, that was actually the song that did it. I was looking through that stuff one day, this was about a year and a half ago, and all of a sudden a little bell went off in my head, said, this would be a great song, you know? And then I thought, just let me prattle on for a while. And then I thought, Dave, there's a reason why you're not top of the pops, you know? No one writes Civil War songs anymore, especially where people die, you know? And so I wrote the song and played it for a couple people, and the first person I played it for, his reaction was, oh, thanks, Dave, can I commit suicide now? And I really thought I was a jerk. And then about 2 months later, the Ken Burns thing, the PBS Civil War show, came on. And I went, you know, instantly I went from being a jerk to being a cliche. You know, it's like, oh, man, I can't put this out. This is now, boy, and everybody's going to say he's trying to get on PBS or something. And I actually wasn't going to put the song on the record, but the producers talked me into it. It's a personal song in the sense that it's probably, for me, in a weird way, the funnest song to sing, because I can get out a lot of frustrations over it does tie into my personal life, and I can't go into it because I'd probably be sued or something, but it's a very I'm going to mispronounce this word, but it's a very cathartic thing to sing, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a song about death and depression and isolation, and so who couldn't relate to some of that? Well, let's. That sounded pretty grim, didn't it? Oh, getting into a mood here.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear Andersonville, and this is from Dave Alvin's new album, Blue Boulevard.
In the spring of 61, I kissed my mother goodbye. I put on a blue uniform and I fought for Lincoln's side until I got caught by Johnny Reb in the woods near Chapel Hill. And I wish to God he'd have killed me then, but he sent me to Andersonville. My uniform has faded and there's no boots upon my feet, and I'm pulling worms out of the mud, 'cause there's nothing else to eat.
and the Reds can't even feed their own, so there's no way they can't fill the bellies of the Yankees, starving in Andersonville.
That's some of Andersonville from Dave Alvin's new album, Blue Boulevard. Well, just to make matters perhaps a little bit more depressing, I think you were actually kind of ill when you were writing the song. I know you had meningitis for a while, and
yeah.
It seems like you probably wrote this during that period.
Wrote it right after. And, I guess maybe a stay in the hospital would definitely make you think you're in a prison camp. I don't know. I'm not good with confined spaces.
What are the symptoms of meningitis? What was that period like for you?
Well, I didn't know I had anything. I was on tour. I was doing this this band with Mojo Nixon and a guy named Country Dick Montana. We put together a 19-piece sort of Vegas Billy group using the theory that we wanted to see what it would be like in 20 years from now when we'd all sort of wound up playing in Vegas. But we wanted to do it 20 years before just to get used to it. And we were on tour doing that, and I thought I hate to say this, but I'm one of these guys that, doctor? No, I don't need a doctor. I'm fine, you know. And I thought I just had a really bad cold, you know. I neglected to, you know, I didn't take into consideration the fact that I couldn't walk or that my entire body was covered with a rash, you know. And but it was just, you know, one of those stupid things where when I'd get on stage, everything would be fine, you know, and it would be, you know, rock and roll and sweaty and all that. Then as soon as the show was over, you know, I needed a cane and I was walking with my back bent and everything. And so I wound up in the hospital out on the road. And
it seems like you emerged from that experience with new energy to write songs again.
Yeah, well, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like the movies, you know, I wish it was, you know. I'm out of the hospital now, I want to write songs. But, there were just certain things that kind of gives you that power to be unpopular, you know, that power to be yourself. And, you know, the one thing about playing the kind of music that I play is people from day one have been saying, why do you want to play that? Why don't you, you know, you're never going to get anywhere playing that stuff. And whether this was in, like when I was in high school and my brother and I, you know, the only things we were interested in were, you know, Big Joe Turner and T-Bone Walker and Muddy Waters and Hank Williams, and everybody else was into whatever they were into, and they were all, why do you guys like that old stuff? Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. And don't invite them to parties. They'll bring their records, you know. and I remember when we started the Blasters, and we were, like, trying to get gigs, and we were going to, like, we would go to country bars and play, you know, like, audition nights and stuff, and the country musicians would come over and say, gee, you guys are real good, but you're not going to get anywhere playing that stuff you're playing. And then we go to, a hard rock club, an audition there, you know, do these things where you go and you play for free, and then the people in the audience come and say, what are you playing that for? Why don't you play such and such and such? That's what people want to hear. And so my whole life has been kind of that, you know, it's kind of, everybody wants to tell you what to do and how to fit in, and they all know what's best, you know.
Singer, songwriter, and guitarist Dave Alvin is my guest. He has a new album called Blue Boulevard. We'll talk more after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dave Alvin. Let's hear something from his days with the Blasters. This is Marie Marie. Dave wrote it and is featured on lead guitar. Brother Phil does the vocals.
Marie Marie.
What did the early Blasters sound like before you started recording?
Before we started recording, we sounded more like the Ramones. because that's really what got us back into music was
punk.
Yeah, was the Ramones and the Clash and stuff like that. Because we'd all kind of gotten day jobs. I was a fry cook, and the bass player was working in a factory, and the drummer was working in some factory, and my brother was teaching math. And I had even gotten to the point where I grew up like a Solzhenitsyn beard down to my chest, because I just figured, well, you know, I'm using sort of the thinking of the time. I was like, well, I'm 21, my life's over, you know. and it sounds funny, but I mean, from about the age, like I said, of 12 until about 16. We were hanging in blues bars, and then that kind of disappeared. And so by the time I was 21, it really did kind of seem like life was over.
Did you ever, with the Blasters or with X, play in any of the punk clubs in Los Angeles or anywhere else?
No, we never did anything. What do you talk? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, what do you want to know?
Well, you really liked the music and played the music, but how did you relate to the audience?
Well, in the early days, I felt like in the early days before even we got the Blasters together, I mean, I was going to punk shows, so I felt like I was the audience, you know, I was part of the audience. And in the early days of the Blasters, we would go, you know, our itineraries were hilarious in a way, something that could never happen today. We would play like a Tuesday night at a country bar, Wednesday night at a biker bar. Thursday night, we'd open for a new wave band, not punk, but we'd open for a new wave band. And then on Friday night, we'd open for a Black Flag, you know. and we would tend to go over with just about everybody we got up in front of, you know. And, I mean, we did a tour once with this English band, arena band called Queen. And they had seen us playing in a bar. And we, at that time, hadn't had any records. And we were just playing the, you know, that sort of circuit I just explained, the country biker new wave punk circuit. and we went out in front of the Queen's audience unannounced, you know, they didn't put our name on a marquee or anything, and so there'd be like 17,000 people throwing cherry bombs and beer bottles and whatever they could at us. And that was the Queen, you know, mainstream rock audience. And the Black Flag audience or the Cramps audience or the Circle Jerks audience or you know, the X audience, those bands that we would open for in our early days, their audience was, you know, they just slam and hit each other, you know. They wouldn't throw stuff at us, so it didn't bother me, you know. Those were fun days. I mean, I'm going to sound like an old man here for a second, but there was a lot of, especially in L.A., and I'm sure it was true, you know, in other cities in the country, but in L.A. there was this real us versus them thing. Which, when you're in your early 20s, is a great kind of feeling, you know.
Who was then the record industry and mainstream rock?
And yeah, and the world, you know, the whole world. It's if you were, yeah, you know, they were signing bands that you know were obviously exploitation bands, but they wouldn't sign. You know, X couldn't get a major label deal. The Blasters couldn't get any kind of deal. At that point, even a band, you know, like the Go-Go's couldn't get a deal. You know, I'm talking like 1980, around in there. And that created a real thing, a real sense of camaraderie between all these groups. And those, for that reason, those were really wonderful times. I mean, there was a lot of excessive behavior and this, that, and the other that now we frown on. But it was pretty incredible, you know, and you know, I mean, I have two of my favorite periods of my life are hanging out with, you know, being a little kid with Big Joe Turner and living a couple years during that L.A. rock scene. That was pretty good.
How did you get to hang out with Big Joe Turner?
We just followed him. I mean, there's a long story. I mean, we literally followed him until they took notice. They couldn't help, you know. And my brother would go up. My brother, already at the age of, like, whatever, 14, could sing exactly like Big Joe Turner. And Big Joe just loved that, you know. Or we'd already been collecting 78s, So when we'd go see Lowell Folsom or T-Bone Walker, we could say, you know, oh, well, we got your record, you know, from 1941 or 42, and they would be floored.
In addition to writing lyrics, you write poems.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes something that really frightens me, because sometimes, because sometimes the poems aren't nearly as good as the lyrics. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
There's a lot of people who write kind of bad poetry, and you try to not get into it. but I really like your poems, and I thought I'd ask you to read one, and I thought I'd ask you to read one that seemed very unlike the kind of subject you'd write a song about. And the poem is called My Mother Fell.
Okay.
You're welcome to introduce it if you'd like.
Yeah, usually, my mother was dying, and that's really, I guess that says it all, I guess. My mother fell this afternoon. My mother fell and hit her head on grandmother's jagged wooden table. Strips of her flaky skin clung to the table's sharp edge. I let go of her. I let go of her because she said she was cold. I left her standing alone in her walker as I went for her sweater. But the drugs, or the chemotherapy, had taken away her coordination, and she lost her balance in her walker, and she fell. I let go of her. My mother fell this afternoon like she was a baby, taking her first steps. The pink skin of her forehead quickly turned purple. A small slash of blood dripped into her half-closed eyes. My mother fell this afternoon, and my tears fell into her eyes as I tried to lift her back up. My mother fell this afternoon, my tears with her blood. My mother fell this afternoon. My mother fell.
I think it's a wonderful poem.
Oh, thanks.
Could you ever do a song like that?
I don't know. Maybe these days, yeah. You know, maybe these days if I can write something like Andersonville or something, I could probably do that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Singer, songwriter, and guitarist Dave Alvin. His new solo album, Blue Boulevard, is on High Tone Records. Dave Alvin performs tonight in Philadelphia and later this week in Washington, D.C. and New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.